You're listening to the Ace Broadcasting Network. Allison Rosen. This week on Allison Rosen is your new best friend, Bald Brian.
Are you scared?
No. I mean, I have brain cancer, and most likely I will die from brain cancer someday. I am upset about that fact, but will being upset about that fact increase my quality of life in any way or make my life any better? Absolutely not. Will living my life as though I'm not sick make my life better? Probably. Probably will make however many years I have, hopefully very many, it'll make however many years I have either more enjoyable for myself, for my wife, for my family, for my friends.
Subscribe to Allison Rosen is your new best friend on iTunes or go to AllisonRosen.com. Only from the Ace Broadcasting Network.
Allison's your new best friend.
Now, it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and moderator, Matt DeAndrea.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on, and welcome to yet another, the hell's the name of this show?
CarCast.
Keep doing too many shows.
I'm your host, Matt DeAndrea, and
that's
usual,
right.
The Ace Man.
Lake Speed Jr. here, general manager and head of technical support for Joe Gibbs Driving, or Driven, I should say, Racing Oil. I use the Joe Gibbs stuff in my racing cars, and Lake is a certified lubrication specialist and oil monitoring analyst. Less than 300 people in the world hold both certificates. I love that. So I always ask, I never stop asking. I always want to know about the synthetic versus the dinosaur oil. And there's probably nobody in North America who knows more about oil than you. Joe Gibbs, people know him as, the head coach
Football
of the
coach,
Washington
yeah.
Redskins. And in 99, he had several engine failures, and he's decided to start making his own product?
Yeah, you know, our history as a NASCAR team actually goes back to, like, 1992 when we started. For several years, we had Shell was one of our associate sponsors. You know, kind of the funny background story was that Home Depot was not originally going to be Tony Stewart's sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
Shell had signed up to be the sponsor of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was life. It was good there. And the Shell guys gave us this really cool, fancy trick oil they called their Motorsports Blend that you couldn't buy.
Mm-hmm.
That if Shell gave you a check, you get this free oil.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff worked great. We had great success with our engine program there at Joe Gibbs Racing. And then in 1998, Shell decided, NASCAR is not our direction we're going to do. We're out.
Okay.
And then Tony Home Depot stepped in. And so in 1999, we were just going to Walmart and buying oil. I mean, my dad was a NASCAR driver for, 20 years. And I remember as a teenager, them giving me the company credit card and going to the Kmart in Port Orange, Florida,
yeah.
and buying every quart of Mobil 1 they had in the shelf.
That's right.
And putting it in the race car and Daytona 500 and never had a problem.
Right.
Well, here in 1999, we're just doing like we always have done, go to the store, buy oil, put it in the car, and the cams are going flat. I mean, we're just losing engines left and right. And, Coach being the kind of go-to guy he is.
We Coach said, oh, Joe Gibbs.
Coach Gibbs, yeah.
Yeah. Not the purse manufacturer.
Yeah, yeah. I guess we are in L.A., so I got
to watch out.
Yeah, watch my language, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We went back to Shell, right? Mm-hmm. Said, hey, can we buy this stuff? And they're like, no, you can't. Well, why not? Well, it's not a deal. And we said, well, where can we go? And come to find out, there's only like four companies that actually make the additives that go into oil. I mean, a quart of oil is two things. It's 85% oil, about 15% additives.
Mm-hmm.
There's four companies that make the additives.
Is the oil, the base, the same for most all oils? I mean, especially, or synthetic or not?
Very similar, yeah. There's only three companies that actually make synthetic base oil. ExxonMobil, Chevron, Phillips, and a company called INEOS.
And the rest is how you season it with
yes.
your additives.
Right. Exactly.
A lot like gasoline.
Very similar.
People
to
don't realize that gasoline's basically all the same and all sort of comes from the same place. And then each company does its own little thing. We've got Techworlean and all that crap. But essentially.
And then it becomes a marketing company, right? Like after you.
Exactly. That's the thing. Right. You got three companies that make synthetic base oil. You got four companies that make the additives. But there's probably a million companies that have synthetic oil they sell.
I mean, you go into any store and you're going to see 13 different brands right away.
Right. So and it's all about colors and marketing and sponsorship and stuff like that. And Joe Gibbs, now, what I understand, when my guy was building my Datsun race motors, it's always like, we need the zinc.
Right.
we want zinc in there.
And that was the issue we had, is that the oil we were buying off the shelf, we didn't know it. The EPA had come up with some new regulations for emissions that had caused the oil manufacturers to take the zinc, or not take it out, but reduce it.
You thought you were getting the same Mobil 1 you were getting back in the day.
Right.
But now it's missing a lot of the zinc, and it's screwing up your cams.
Exactly.
And you think you're just getting Mobil 1, and you don't know they've removed the key ingredient that is saving those cams.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's where the guys at Shell were nice enough to point us to Lubrizol, who's no one's ever heard of unless you happen to be a stakeholder in Berkshire Hathaway, because Warren Buffett bought them for $9 billion back in January.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of a deal.
Yeah, he called me and told me about that.
Oh, yeah, insider trading deal, yeah. So anyway, we've got Lubrizol. They're the guys that invented zinc dialkyldithiophosphate, which we just call zinc because that's a lot easier to say.
Right.
Right, and so we hooked up with Lubrizol. They started developing the oils for us. And that's actually where we buy the oil from.
Now, how the difference, and you hear about the break-in oil.
Right.
And then I'm constantly, and like I may need you just to make a call to my buddy Les when we're done here. But, you know, I love the idea of synthetic.
Mm-hmm.
Every human being I speak to in racing goes, oh, yeah, synthetic. But there's one human being on the planet
that doesn't.
That does not go for synthetic, and that's the guy who builds my motors.
But his argument is, he's saying that, you know, the cars that you race.
He still uses the Joe Gibbs.
Right. He's saying the cars that you race are vintage cars. They're built to vintage specs, and the tolerances and the seals and everything on those cars aren't what they are today on a new motor. And he's saying that the synthetic is two things. One, he's saying the zinc you need, and he's saying that the synthetics are just too slippery. They'll just go right through. They'll just start oozing out of everything.
Right, but then everyone who knows about synthetics says, well, wait a minute. They make a synthetic that will work for this application.
Yeah.
And secondly, I don't care if I have to pour in a quart every other year, but go ahead.
Well, the truth is, if you have the right levels of zinc, the right balance of seasonings, right, mm-hmm. in the oil, the engine doesn't care if it's synthetic or it's mineral. Obviously, a synthetic oil, base oil, can handle more heat and more load than a conventional oil, so it's better.
And what about Les's argument of being too slippery? He's saying maybe too slippery, it'll go through the seals.
Here's the deal. Here's the story on the seals.
Because the tolerances aren't there. He's saying those piston rings.
Have you ever had a car that was run on regular gasoline and then you had to switch over to any kind of ethanol fuel?
No, but we live out in Southern California, so I don't know what it is.
Well, you know, the issue is,
we don't have a lot of corn out here.
Well, perfect example. Okay, a couple of years ago in NASCAR, they made a switch from running, you know, unleaded gas to E15.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we had to throw away all of our fuel cells, all the fuel lines. We had to replace all the power valves, all the floats, everything, you know, plastic or rubber in the fuel system and put in the exact same piece.
Right.
Why? Well, because the seals became conditioned to the unleaded fuel.
Mm-hmm.
When you put in the ethanol fuel, it shocks the seals. They're all freaked out.
I've never thought of that.
It's the same thing with synthetic. If the engine is run on synthetic pretty much its whole life, it's never going to hate it.
So if you build the engine and you start feeding it, it's sort of like poi with a Hawaiian.
Maybe so.
Well, you try to give us poi now and we'll spit that shit out. Like, what the hell? Are you kidding? But if you grow up on it, it's fine.
Right.
So when you build the engine and you break it in and all that stuff, if it's only known synthetic, then that's what it'll be used to and it'll be fine.
Correct.
So the pros on synthetic, other, you know, obviously there's the longevity part, but when you're talking about racing, I mean, for a street application, you go, well, I don't have to change my oil every 4,000 or 5,000 miles. I can change it every 11,000 miles because it's synthetic. But for a racing application, you guys are going to change your oil I'm going to change my oil probably after each race, even though I'm not putting mine through, which you right. guys are putting yours through. So are you picking up a couple of more horsepower? Like, I mean, what if I said in a NASCAR motor, you just had to run a straight, you know, non-synthetic, old good old boy from the 60s or 70s motor oil versus synthetic?
We'd be screwed.
You really would. Like, yeah. You would lose. Would it be 5 horsepower? Like, would it be all about wear and tear?
It's more about wear and tear.
More about wear and tear.
The benefit of the
and heat.
Well, yeah. The benefit of the horsepower gain or the friction reduction is the last thing. There's really 4 things of why you'd want to use a synthetic oil.
Mm-hmm.
First is the temperature stability. If you watch any of the Daytona races anymore, I mean, the guys are running 300 degrees, they're pushing water out of the radiator the whole race.
Right.
So to be able to run at 300 degrees oil temperature the entire race, the only oil you can do that with is synthetic. I mean, the mineral oils would be junk. So the higher temperature stability is a big one. The next one is what they call viscosity index. And I know me and Matt talked about this earlier, you know, is that all oils get thinner as they get hotter.
Right.
But synthetic oils don't thin out as much. They actually hold their viscosity better. Even though when you pour them out, they look like they're water.
Yeah.
They don't change that much, whereas conventional oils pour out like molasses and then turns into water.
That's funny because Lake gave you a great presentation. He's like, you know when you pour syrup on your pancakes, as soon as it hits hot pancakes, it gets really watery?
Yeah.
That's it. That's his presentation. That's how he sells oil.
Are there any additives that are out there? I mean, all the slick 50s and all that kind of stuff. Are there any of those that are out there that are worth a damn? And are they even necessary in this day and age of synthetic oil? Because I used to see all those commercials. My favorite one is when they had like the ball bearing and they had the weight spring thing on it, and they'd pull on it and they're like, and it stops.
Every time I walk into
the
store, there's the little gear I can turn.
One arm,
you know, the little gear.
Well, so all the additives in this day and age are really neither here nor there if you use a decent synthetic base.
Like the over the counter bottle.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter. I mean, actually, one of the questions on the exam I had to take to get certified is when is it appropriate to use an aftermarket additive in a crankcase? And the answer is never.
Never.
That's the answer. It's the only one-word answer on the whole exam. You know, it's because it's all about, you said before, it's about the seasoning, the balance.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the right oil that has the right additives in there already, if you put something else in there, it can cause havoc. I mean, a perfect example is, you know, one guy will say, man, I used XYZ additive and I picked up 5 horsepower. Another guy will say, I used XYZ additive and I lost 5 main bearings.
Right.
Which one's lying? Well, neither one of them are. The one guy put it in with his Valvoline or whatever, and it worked great. The other guy put it in with his Castrol, and it didn't mix.
Right.
Because the chemical balance is different.
So Joe Gibbs makes the synthetic oil with the high zinc content that we talk about that, like I said, my engine guy always uses and talks about. Also talks about high zinc in the break-in department. We'll talk about break-in oil in a second. And then but Joe Gibbs also makes a mineral oil-based oil too, right? That's the break-in oil, the non-synthetic.
Correct.
But I think, maybe I'm mistaken, but I think I run the break-in oil in my engine. A lot of guys do. Now, what do you think of that?
Well, it's fine. I mean, for what you're doing, right? If you go out to a typical weekend where you're only going to put a couple hours of runtime on the engine, it's fine. Because that means the break-in oil for us was originally designed to not just help break in the cam to keep it from going flat. It was also, because our guys are lazy, we want to have one oil for the dyno and be able to do all the dyno tuning and testing on one oil, because it's a pain in the butt to go in there and change out 5 gallons of oil in the dyno. It was like, okay, we want to break in the engine for 30 minutes. We want to make, you know, all these power runs. We got about 2 hours of runtime on the engine before it comes off the dyno.
Mm-hmm.
There's one oil in there the whole time. That's the break-in oil.
Explain what the break-in oil is to people that are listening, how that's going to be different than the other oils.
Basically, you know, a break-in oil, and it kind of goes back to the old days when you used to buy a car and they had break-in oil in it, and they said, okay, run 500 miles on this and then bring it back and change it because you have special break-in oil in there. Well, what break-in oil is basically like primer for your engine. You know, think about it. Any new engine, just like a cinder block wall, it's never been painted.
Mm-hmm.
All those surfaces need, you know, that protective film.
Mm-hmm.
So for a break-in, you have super high levels of zinc, like way more than you would ever need, going forward, but you need that just to establish. It's kind of like, again, painting that cinder block wall.
Right.
It takes a ton of paint, right? Your shop wall's in there. Somebody was out there probably for hours with blue paint trying to get that,
it drinks that blue. It to
yeah. Exactly.
Right. Now, and you hear about it, especially with flat tappet cams. What about roller cams and things like that?
Well, they need it too. I mean, all those surfaces, like Adam said, they drink up the zinc to try to get that film established.
So you're almost just sort of like bedding it. You know, all the like seasoning, like a pan, like you would, like a cast iron pan.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're breaking it in, you're seasoning it, you're priming it, whatever analogy you want to use, you're establishing that foundation.
Well,
once
so,
you've established it, then the regular wall can just maintain
it. Like if we have the pancakes, would we cook the links in the cast iron pan? Because I'm wanting some breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's,
let's go to IHOP after this, folks.
We totally should.
Dude, we got Cracker Barrel back at back
I need.
Oh, I missed the Cracker Barrel because they just, like, you're like, yeah, I'll have a glass of water. You like some gravy on that?
No, cornbread and muffins.
Just, you want gravy ice cubes in there? They're like, they give you a change to dump gravy in your hand when you're leaving. Like
gravy ice cubes. There you go.
Like dumping gravy on
everything. Yeah, I want an iced coffee. It comes with gravy ice cubes.
Yeah.
I need zinc in my diet, so I'm going to drink some Joe Gibbs breaking oil. I don't know.
So is Joe Gibbs... I can't, and again, it's good because my guy Les uses it on everything, and he loves the zinc, and it's a lot of zinc conversation, and he likes the dinosaur stuff because he's old school.
He's a bit of a dinosaur.
He likes the old school. Yeah, it works.
His reasoning makes sense. His logic makes sense. He hasn't really had a problem with the way he's doing it, so I don't know why we keep questioning him.
I miss shifts all the time, and I never break anything. Joe Gibbs, so he always is getting the Joe Gibbs stuff, but I don't know because I haven't been hanging out. Actually, I was at a Pep Boys yesterday. I lied, but I didn't go. Oh God, go to the Hollywood Pep Boys. Oh dear God, standing by the case, waiting for the guy to come by with the keys so I could get my spray paint out of it. Nothing more depressing. I know.
That's painful.
Yeah, you got to look like what? Yeah, in Hollywood, if you want spray paint, you have to go talk to some 18-year-old guy with a skull tattooed on his forehead and go, "Hey, come here, man. Could the keymaster come over and let me get to my primer over here?"
Did he ask you for ID? Are you a street artist?
No, I guess he figured I wasn't a tagger. But I didn't walk through the oil section. Where is Joe Gibbs at? Is the product?
No.
Is it mail order?
Yeah. Summit, Jags, those kind of places.
What's the plan?
Can you get it on Amazon?
Is there Amazon
too? Yeah, we do have it on
good.
Amazon.
Good. You click through our website. You click through the Amazon banner at Ace CarCast and show us a little love. Is there a bigger plan? Like we're going to be in Chief Auto, Craig and Auto Parts, or is it that kind of thing, or is it specifically we do motor racing stuff? You know, this is
right.
It's an enthusiast oil.
It's not.
Yeah, we're an enthusiast. Well, we say we service four markets. You know, the engine break in crowd, which is huge. We were the first company to have a break in oil, so engine break in. Collector cars, hot rods, you know, you got cars that sit around for tons of time.
Yeah. But Adam doesn't have any of those.
No, I didn't notice those. We have oil specifically for cars that sit.
I like that.
Yeah.
Now, how does that work?
And does it matter, like, the Mira versus the DB9 you saw out there? They're both sitting.
Yeah, the same thing. When you have cars that sit for extended periods of time that hardly ever run, you actually need an oil that has rust and corrosion inhibitors to sit in there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know,
yes.
So we actually have an oil that has extra rust and corrosion inhibitors just for classic cars and cars that sit around.
Yeah. When that oil's sitting in the pan for, in your case, 24 months.
Sure.
Then everything else above it that's dry will start to rust. Any type of moisture that gets into the engine at all is going to ruin whatever's there.
Yeah, we have we worked with a group up in Reno that actually has a huge car collection, hundreds of cars. And they actually ended up using our stuff to store all of them because they had a rust problem.
Yeah.
When the cars sit for so long.
There you go.
You know, so, engine break-in, collector cars, street performance. Obviously, a lot of guys who have a car, they go track day and that kind of stuff. So they have this kind of quasi-need for I need a race oil, but really not a race oil because a true race-only oil, which is the fourth category we service, and obviously is our bread and butter business, that's low detergent, which means it's only designed to run maybe 500, 1,000 miles the most.
And then you dump it.
And then you dump it.
What about filtration? What, you know...
Oh, that's a loaded topic.
Well, I mean, some cars have elements. Some cars just have the frames that spin on there.
I've seen some crafty, cleanable, stainless steel type of.
The key for filtration is this. The tightest clearance in your engine, you need a filter that can remove that particle size. Because it's the dirt that's the size of the clearance that can actually get in there.
Right.
If it's too small, it passes through. If it's too big, it doesn't get in.
Right.
So it's the clearance size particles that are the key you want to filter out. Mm-hmm. And you get a filter that's very effective at that filter at that particle size, things are going to be good.
And do you have a preference on a conventional like paper filter versus, let's say, a stainless mesh, washable, cleanable?
Well, they call it like a depth style media, which be like a fiberglass or a paper, or anything that's got depth to it, typically can capture and hold more dirt than something that's a mesh that's a one size. Because as those things start to clog up, you start reducing flow. Although people
would
have
you take them out
both
and you clean them.
Yeah.
Right. How when you were, we were talking about sort of mixing and matching, how important is it when you buy a new car, Audi, BMW, whatever, Cadillac, and it says use Mobil 1 or use this synthetic brand on this vehicle, that when it comes time to change the oil, you use not only synthetic, not only that weight, but that oil.
Right.
When it's a street application.
Yeah,
I buy a BMW 3 Series, and it says, use Mobil 1 so-and-so. But all I got around is the Joe Gibbs synthetic or Royal Purple or whatever it is. I'm back at Pep Boys. How important is it to that engine?
Very.
So when the manufacturer says, this is the oil we use, and you buy the car, that's the oil you use until that car leaves you.
You should.
That's the way it should be done.
I'm the head tech guy, so people call me all the time. If you have a bone stock application, you've done nothing from the factory to make this engine have higher performance, right? Then what you need to do is go to the back of your owner's manual and look up what oil they call for, right? Use that viscosity, meets that spec, and get a synthetic, pick a brand you trust, and use that brand and that brand only, and don't vary around.
Well, look, there's a lot of guys out there now that are, let's say, they're picking up new Mustangs, the four valves, the three valves, and they get it right off the showroom floor, and it's got some Motorcraft synthetics, some 5W30 on it. Now, you can run that. You can continue to run it. It should be fine. You're saying that's the best solution, but let's say, you're starting to add some performance. Maybe you add a supercharger. Maybe the supercharger's oil-fed.
You call me.
Okay, now we call you?
And now you call me. Yeah, when you start increasing cylinder pressure, right, either by changing cam or manifold or exhaust or however you start increasing the output of that engine, you've increased cylinder pressure. So now that poor exhaust valve has to open against that increased pressure, which increases the load throughout the whole valve train, which increases the demand on the zinc in the oil. That's where you need higher level of zinc beyond stock. Because it's a stock engine, they've tested it, and they've already done all the engineering. It's okay. This oil has enough zinc to protect the loads we see in this stock configuration.
Okay.
They tested it. It's good. Once you change that combination, now you change the requirement for the zinc, and that's when you need to come call us.
Okay, so then my next question would be, let's say you're picking up a Mustang or something like that, and you're going to start doing some work on it. You're saying you typically want to stick with the oil that the engine knows. So what if you pick up a car that's got 35,000 miles on it, and now I put a supercharger on it, and now I'm increasing pressure, and...
Well, you may end up having a few drops of oil underneath your oil pan, maybe. Mm-hmm.
And what about...
There's worse things in life.
At that point, do I still call you and say, look, I got 35,000 miles, it's still a fairly new car, but...
More than likely, it's going to be okay.
Is there anything... this is going to sound stupid, but remember the oil flushing? They'd like flush the system out. And we're talking about, out with the old and in with the new. Like taking the pictures of the first wife and putting them down when you invite the girlfriend over to the house. Flushing the system out before you introduce the new oil into the system. Is there such a thing? Does it matter? Is it a waste of money? Is it fall under the heading of those same categories, those additives? Or, when it's time to change.
Right, you got 100,000 miles on the car. I mean, what do you do?
Perfect example. Yeah, let's go back to your Mustang example. You buy a Mustang secondhand. It's got 35,000 miles on it, but it's a fairly recent model. Say it's an 05 or something. the best thing to do is figure out, okay, I'm going to put a supercharger on this. I'm going to do this and do that to it. Okay, what I want to do is I want to pick the oil that I'm going to use with all the modifications. I'm going to put it in there. I'm going to run that oil maybe 1,000 miles and then drain it out and then refill.
That'll flush it.
Yes.
You flush it with the stuff you're going to be using.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost. So that's interesting.
When you roll up to the Easy Lube and the guy's like, oh, yeah, we're going to flush it in. And he basically takes the.
He puts transmission fluid through it.
And, you know, and he takes the plug off the pan and then puts his little auto filler in the top, runs the engine and just pumps oil through that. That doesn't seem like a good idea to me, but.
No, I would not recommend.
So you say run it for 1,000 miles with the stuff it's going to have. That stuff is going to penetrate and pick up what's left of your old stuff, then flush that, and then go with the new stuff.
Anything that you're like, if you're running in the aftermarket, let's say you add a supercharger that's oil fed or turbochargers that need to be oil cooled, you're basically running, like you got to break in those items for the first time, essentially, right?
All that stuff does, yeah.
So even if your car has 35,000 miles on it, you add a turbo to it.
There's no miles on the turbo.
Right, there's no miles on the turbo. You got to break that stuff
in. So you could actually use break-in oil for 500 miles.
Yeah.
Right. And then drain it out, and then put in the oil you're going to run after that and be good. Because that would serve to flush and break in at the same time.
Yeah. We've got a question from Alex on line one. He's got a 79 air-cooled VW. Yeah, because now air-cooled, you really rely on the oil. Alex?
Hey, Adam. Long-time listener. First-time caller.
Thanks, buddy. Thanks for calling. What's up?
Well, I have the 79 air-cooled, and I'm a huge user of synthetics, but not with the air-cooled stuff because it already has... Well, as you know with Volkswagens, enough leaks already, and I've always been told that synthetics by the older crowd are a no-go with air-cooled.
Yeah, well, a good thing we have Lake Speed here. And by the way, 79...
It's almost like these questions were made for him.
79 must have been the very last year that VW was doing anything air-cooled. What's the last year of the Beetle?
I don't know, but wasn't...
79? I feel like they had the rabbit out in like 75, 76.
But even on the topic of air-cooled, when did they run the 911 to like 93?
Oh, air-cooled.
Air-cooled.
Well, that's a good point.
You know?
Yeah, but
it actually had a 2-liter.
It had an air-cooled 2-liter in your bug?
In my bus. It was an air-cooled 2-liter.
Oh, bus.
Not the
so you're talking ultra-high performance.
Known, but it was still the Boxster air-cooled everything.
Talking bus. 70
horsepower. I'm assuming the displacement was just up.
Yeah, okay.
It was a strange motor, a lot of California emissions stuff.
Sure.
Real pain in the butt.
All right. Well, what about that? Like, what about synthetic with air-cooled crowd?
Not a problem at all. In fact, one of the things we meant to say earlier about the NASCAR deal, synthetic actually has a higher heat capacity. It can actually absorb more heat from the parts. You actually get better cooling efficiency. So if you had a properly formulated synthetic for an air-cooled engine, you would have great success. Most of the problems people have in the bad rap that synthetics have gotten over time was because people went from using a conventional oil where all the seals and everything had been conditioned conventional oil, and they got excited about synthetic oil, and they drained out the other stuff and put in new synthetic oil, and it started leaking, or it did weird things, and they weren't happy because they didn't know it's not really the oil's fault necessarily. It was a bit of a misapplication.
Right.
Again, if he's got one that he gets rebuilt, you know, for whatever reason, if after break-in you put in synthetic, it's no problem at all. Actually, we do a lot of work with an engine builder that all he does is air-cooled Porsches and Volkswagen motors, and we actually helped him to develop a air-cooled specific oil.
Oh, there you go. So Alex should keep doing what he's doing unless he rebuilds the motor.
Right. Now, is your break-in oil, that's mineral, correct? Do you have a synthetic break-in?
No, you don't want synthetic for break-in.
You don't want synthetic with break-in. But now, see, here's the part that's confusing to me. We're talking about introducing one oil and then introducing a new oil and confusing your seals.
Correct.
Seal confusion.
Well, so poor seals. Just don't club them.
Right. So now it sounds, this is counterintuitive to me because you've introduced a mineral-based oil in the break-in, and now we're going to swap it out for the synthetic-based stuff. That does seem like a confusion on the seal. Like, why not go synthetic straight on through, like a synthetic break-in and then a synthetic a full-time motor oil?
You could do a synthetic break-in oil, but it would be 4 times more expensive than the conventional oil, and then people.
Oh, you're dumping it.
Yeah, you're going to dump it in 500 miles. So why do you? And in 500 miles is not enough time for the seals to get very conditioned and very happy. They're not laid. They're not laid out and dried like they are in Pier 52 in San Francisco yet.
So all you're really talking about, your break in oil is all about the additives. So you're saying, you know, most oils are maybe 80% whatever, and then you guys do 20%. But your break in oil is not that way.
Breaking oil is a little bit more like on steroids. Just for that one little bit of period of time to establish that foundation, then the regular oil just maintains it. The zinc levels come down to a more normal level, and you just maintain. The race oils have all these exotic friction modifiers to make more horsepower.
Right.
The hot rod oil has all the rust inhibitors to prevent rust. You know, the street performance oil is kind of a combination of the two. You know, it kind of falls somewhere in between so that it gets, you know, best of both worlds to some degree.
So what kind of zinc content is involved? Like, what's the difference between your race oils and your street oils?
Well, basically, all of the break-in oils are really high, like 2,800 parts per million, which is like stupid high, right? Then you get down to the race oils, and they all fall into about 1,200, and that, which is, you know, the normal passenger car oils today, it's 800 is the max for, say, a 5W30. But we have a 5W30, you know, street performance oil that's 1,200, which is what it used to be back in the day before we had problems.
Okay.
I think we have another question, by the way. Brian, line two up. Brian?
Yes, sir.
Well, you got a vintage racing
question?
Nice to be
here with all of you.
Yeah, good to see you.
I run my car at track events. It's a Cobra Daytona Coupe replica, Factory 5, and I've got a small block Ford engine. Though it gets pretty hot, about 260 or 70 degrees sometimes. I've been told to change my oil between track day events, and I've been doing that. It holds about 12 quarts, so it's a great big oil pan and cooler. But I've always wondered, is that the wise way to go, or should I simply use synthetic oil and use it throughout the season? I don't put that many miles on the car.
So, Lake, when you cook your oil, so to speak, you can don't let me put words in your mouth, but can you cook mineral oil and sort of thus burn it, ruin it, or whatever it, versus synthetic, harder to cook? You know, too much temperature in it for too long a period of time?
Yes. Basically, about 240 degrees Fahrenheit, the oxidation rate, which is the fancy chemical word for the breakdown of the oil, at 240F on a conventional dinosaur oil, oxidation rate skyrockets.
Right.
And every 18 degrees Fahrenheit increase from that, you've cut your oil life in half.
So you've burnt your oil. You've ruined your oil to a great degree.
Well, yeah, you're shortening the life. The life of the oil is getting really great or getting very small, which is why people in the old school was, okay, use conventional oil, change it every race.
Right.
Because
in
the old days, you ran small oil capacities, wet sump motors that ran ridiculously hot.
Right.
And you just changed oil every race, and that made sense. If you have a 12-quart capacity system, once you've refreshed the engine and you put synthetic in it, with that much volume, synthetics can run 320 degrees before they start hitting that point. So your key then is you just change the oil filter after each race.
And add a quart.
Add a quart of oil. As long as the oil looks good, it is good. I mean, it sounds really rednecky, but it's just the truth. I mean, the oil
so
turns
rednecky.
Well, it's just basic. If the oil looks good, it is good. It turns dark, starts to smell, change it.
So he wants to go and switch to a synthetic. Does he have to go with 12 quarts of synthetic, then swap it out, then put 12 more quarts in? Or could he put in, I don't know, 8 or 9 quarts, run it for a little while?
You don't want
to No, I'm saying of the same synthetic, like we're talking about the sort of flush out.
Okay.
The sort of flushing notion here. Like what if he put in 8 quarts of the synthetic, got the motor up to temperature, kept it at that temperature for a little while, and then flushed it out and put in 12 quarts. Could he try and do that?
Oh, yeah. I was down at Shaver Specialties, a racing engines company down in Torrance yesterday, doing some oil tests, actually.
What? You?
Yeah.
Huh?
I know.
Nuts.
Shocking.
Nuts.
And it's an 8-quart system, and when I was doing flushing between the oils to try to season them in, I would only put in 5 quarts because that's enough to get the engine running and bring it up to temperature. Why waste 3 quarts of oil?
So Brian, what kind of events are you doing?
Just track day events.
You know, at Laguna Seca this year, they're going to have 45 Cobras out on the track.
Real Cobras.
Don't rub it in. It's because he's got one from South Africa. Come on.
This is a coupe. He said it was a coupe.
I built mine. It's a Factory 5. Adam, reach over and give Moderator a titty twister for me.
Thank you. Factory 5's out of South Africa, right?
No.
No, Boston.
No. Oh, shit.
Yeah, I didn't say
Rhode Island.
That was Adam.
No, they're Rhode Island.
Superformance.
Oh, Superformance.
Is the South Africa
shit.
Stuff. No, I'm all with you
all
on the Factory 5.
All right, now hold on. You got the Factory 5 coupe then.
Yeah.
Oh, so
yeah.
The Daytona
like
Cobra Coupe. I like that car, too.
Yeah, that's a cool car.
Sweet.
With the right paint scheme. You know what? Actually, I spoke to Pete Brock about that very car.
Name dropper.
The ladies go nuts when I talk about Pete Brock.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know, and Pete told me that with the original Daytona, that the side was pretty slabby. And that he really wanted to kind of bring it in, like you have in your Factory 5 one, and or your Superformance one.
He has Factory 5.
All right. Point is this. He never really had the time to sort of finish it. He told me the way he really wanted to finish it. And with the new coupe, he now was able to get it to how he wanted it. So you can tell people with a certain amount of pride, this car, even though the original car is worth $7 million more, this is worth as much as...
Yeah, this is the better car. Yours
exactly
is the better
is.
Car, Brian.
Yeah, this is like a bone stock Scirocco would be. But the point is, I have the satisfaction of knowing. I sleep well at night, my friend, knowing that Pete Brock wanted that car to look like this car. Don't lean on the fiberglass. Thank you,
you
very
go.
Much. That's a cool car. I like it. And as a matter of fact, I was, years ago, when everyone was talking about the GT40 kits that were all, you know, first they had the Cobra kits and then the GT40 kits. I was like, somebody's got to do the Daytona Cobra because that's a bitchin' front engine car.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they started doing it. And with those Roush, you know, crate motors with the injection and, you know, just sort of 500 horsepower, drive it every day and all
like
that kind of stuff.
That's
just a lot of fun right there.
It's a great car. I'll send you a picture. My wife bought mirrors from Pete Brock. Actually, talked to his wife.
Really? Gail.
He took my mirrors to the post office to mail them in time for my birthday.
Wow. That is that's a great story and very sad that Pete had that kind of time. I have been to Pete Brock's house.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He lives in a place in Henderson that it's like the greatest thing ever. They built some huge, like, double gated community with all these big, beautiful houses on top of a hill that overlooks Vegas. And then the housing crisis hit and none of them sold. And he got his house at like half price and nobody else sold a house. They didn't sell another house. So now he has his own guard and his own gate. And it's like he's in his own gated community, but he's the only one.
are the houses there just empty? Does he just take every garage?
It's like Omega Man. Yeah. And so he lives in this huge house on top of this huge hill in this huge gated community, but he's the only one who lives there. So it's like he has his own guard and his own gate and his own driveway. It's this crazy weird thing. And I don't know if they'll ever sell the other places or how it's going to work, but he just literally lives alone. I mean, with his wife, Gail. Up on this beautiful house that overlooks Vegas. Yeah, last time...
He's not telling you that his HOAs are $14,000 a month.
Right.
He has to pay for the guard.
He's
got to
pick
there.
Up all of it.
The guard, the gate. He's got to pay for all of it himself.
Yeah.
At least he can drive as fast as he wants to in his neighborhood. No one's going to complain about it.
Yeah. It's
Cut
really
through
nice.
Through some lawns and shit.
Yeah. I'm going to be a one-upper and tell you that he picked me up at the airport when I landed in Vegas. In his,
was he in a Daytona coupe?
He was driving a... actually, his wife was driving... Everyone drives a Ford F-150, by the way. Like, that... If Ford is doing truck commercials, they should just go, look, every single legendary guy who ever built a car picks everyone up at the airport in a Ford F-150 extended cab. Like, that's all
that's
they drive.
That's the going-out car.
That's their car. They no matter what, this guy's a Datsun guy. Yeah. He's not driving a Tundra. It's got the Ford F-150.
That's why you can get, like, the Limited or Platinum Edition that's, like, at, like, you know, it's like getting inside of an Audi.
Mm-hmm.
It's an right. F-150 Audi.
Oh.
$65,000 truck.
Speaking of the
My dad's got one.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like every car guy, while they can't agree on, you know, what kind of car to race or what kind of motor oil to use, they can't agree on the one truck that they're going to use to drag the car to the race or drag themselves to the race. Lake, and speaking of Audi, we want to toss to actually some video with the R8, which is absolutely unbelievable. Lake, let's toss out drivenracingoil.com, www.drivenracingoil.com. Now, you saw the case of Royal Purple that's out. I put it out front because I was just going to toss it. You know,
I thought it was a welcome present.
No, I was like, get that shit out of here, man. But, you know, it's going to get lonely if there's no Joe Gibbs Racing Oil next to it. So I'll be waiting by the door for my case of Joe Gibbs. Because I'll tell you, man, we use that stuff in all of my race cars. And now I did not know that you guys had the hot rod stuff for the cars that sit around.
I want to know which of your oils should Adam put in his car.
Nobody parks a car like me. And I tell people all the time, this ain't no Trailer Queen. It doesn't get driven at all. Like, you don't understand. It doesn't
it's
even,
never been on a trailer.
It doesn't get driven to the trailer. Yeah. It doesn't move. You understand? No Trailer Queens here. No. I either have, my cars have two modes, which is either not moving at all or me attempting to break them on a track. There's not much in between. And I have a lot that don't move at all. But that you have an oil for that would have the rust inhibitor,
correct.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, I like that.
So I'm going to need like 3,700 quarts of that.
3,700 quarts. Okay.
You can do it in 55-gallon barrels if you want to save time.
Oh, I send you a tanker load.
I need a pallet jack, too. Yeah. All right.
Somebody order a forklift.
Lake, this has been a little slice of heaven. Lake Speed Jr. And again, the website, drivenracingoil.com. If you're serious about your vehicle, you'll pick up. And again, this is no hobby. And the thing about Joe Gibbs is, you know, he's set for life. He doesn't need you. He didn't need to go create his own oil. He did it because he had to. He needed it. No one else created it, and he created it. It's not like he was sitting around looking at his Super Bowl ring going, you know what? I'd like to sell some crappy oil to some idiots. Yeah. He was like, hell no. There is a void, and it needs to be filled with zinc.
That's right.
That's
right. It's not just to put his name in a Pep Boys.
That's right. And hell, he doesn't. He thumbs his nose at Pep Boys.
Yeah. Fuck them. We don't
fuck Pep Boys, he says. DrivenRacingOil.com. Lake Speed Jr., thank you so much for coming
nice,
in.
Guys.
And hang out, by the way, and go to AdamCroll.com, by the way, and check out this video. This is the Audi
R8. This is the V10.
This is the V10.
Ooh, my favorite car we've driven so far.
Enjoy. Ah, yes, the Audi R8. Finally, it's here. This is the V10.
This is the 10-cylinder. It's got a real 6-speed manual transmission. Who knows if we're ever going to see that again?
I really like it. I like it a lot. I like the gated shift. I like the knurled aluminum knob.
Every time you shift, it gives that nice click noise.
Get that click sound. It is just awesome. And the V10 spools up very nicely. Naturally aspirated.
Yeah.
Say it was 5.2 liter.
It's 525 horsepower, and I want to say the red line's like 8,700 RPM. To get 10 cylinders to wind out like that, it just sounds amazing.
And again, that's not, you know, an F1 3-liter 10-cylinder motor. That's over 5 liters, spools up very quickly. Car just feels balanced, and, you know, this is the very definition of having your cake and eating it, too, in terms of you could drive it in traffic.
So easy to drive.
It's so easy to drive. It's so easy to manage. Air conditioning going, satellite radio, no heating issues. Nothing's temperamental about it. And I don't even know, honestly, from a maintenance standpoint, the difference between driving this car and just driving an Audi.
The warranty, I believe, is the same. I think it's still 4-year, 50,000 mile. Like, it's still just a regular Audi warranty. The 10-cylinder is the same engine that's derived from the Lamborghini Gallardo, which we know, but it's also the same one that was in the Audi S6.
Right. So there's not, I mean, other than the scheduled oil changes and stuff like that, there's not a bunch of exotic stuff that comes along with
this
car?
I don't think
so.
It's not like some of the other cars we've seen. Even the Nissan GTR or the Aston Martin, like you drive the Aston Martin and there's something like, what is it, like the first 2,500 miles, you have to at least take it in for its checkup, tighten
the
bolts.
Well, the Aston Martin is like, if you let it sit for more than 2 days, yeah. the battery goes dead. And they don't tell you, then at a certain point, most Ferraris and Aston Martins and a lot of cars are this way, where they go, oh, if you don't drive this car every 2 days, you got to keep it on the trickle charger. Yeah. And you're like, well, thanks, douchebag, who sold me the car for not telling me this information, yeah. because my Aston Martin battery's gone dead 200,000 times. It's never started when I've started. And it's not a Ford Explorer, and you have four kids, meaning...
Right.
If there was a car that you were going to let sit for more than 2 days, it would be the DB9. It would be the Ferrari 599. Yeah. It would be the Ferrari 612. Like, obviously, these are weekend, go out with the guma, you know, leave the wife at home kind of cars. These aren't everyday cars. So just by virtue of the fact that they're not everyday cars, they're yeah. going to be dead every other weekend, you know, because you're keeping it in Palm Springs and you go out there and you drive your Denali out there and then you hop in and it's dead every time. This seems like a nice sort of middle ground between something like the Nissan GTR and the aforementioned like Gallardo
yeah.
or Ferrari 430.
And
what
I think,
is it, 436?
Yeah, or the 458 is the new one.
Yeah,
this is probably as close to a Porsche Turbo S that's
yeah.
out there. The Turbo S, because of its all-wheel drive, might be a little faster. Of course, the GTR is.
Yeah.
But this car is actually easier to drive than the GTR. It's more comfortable.
And I would probably say, as I've said before, this car's beautiful, but they've not changed the shape in about 4 years.
No, I think the 2014 model is going to get a mild facelift. It's not going to be too radical, but one of the things that you might see
mm-hmm.
is no more manual transmission. They're
right.
going to go to a dual clutch.
Yeah, I would.
Which I would miss.
If I was watching at home at AdamCarolla.com, I would get myself a 2009
yeah.
8-cylinder version of this, just owned by one podiatrist in Palm Springs that put 7,000 miles on it.
That kept
still
it
under
Palm
warranty,
Springs,
that kept it inside. And that's it. That's it. And I think I'd get it for $91,000 and call myself a genius. And if I felt like I didn't spend enough money, I'd go to one of those guys that bolts on the supercharger.
Yeah, like VF Engineering, one of those guys. I tell you though,
and
driving,
spend another $12,000.
The 8-cylinder versus the 10-cylinder, the performance doesn't really compare. Like this car
right.
is a monster.
But once you get the 8-cylinder for $90,000 and you spend $11,500 on the intercooler and the bolt-on turbocharger or the bolt-on supercharger, and then you get another 100 foot-pounds of torque than this car has currently, and another 12 horsepower, I think you'd be fine with it.
This is a 2012, so in 2014, when the facelift comes out, you probably get a good deal on this, too.
Yeah.
And
it looks fantastic. It just works. I mean, for me, a lot of the cars, and maybe the Italia, the 458 is doing this a little bit, maybe the Gallardo's this way a little bit, maybe a lot of the stuff, although I don't think the Murcielago's this way with the as far as Lamborghini goes.
New one,
a lot of them are just getting a little bit too streamlined, a little bit too, you know, stealth fighter, a little bit too F-22 Raptor, like a little Gennaro something, missing a little of that just je ne sais quoi, the crazy flair.
And it seems
flare.
Like the design motif of all these cars is very angular, where this one is much softer and rounder.
Yeah, a little more of the bar
still,
soap. Yeah.
Like you said, it's been out for years and it doesn't feel dated. It still feels way futuristic to me.
Yes. All right.
So this one is $150,000, but with all these bits, we got $185,000.
So we got $30,000 worth of...
$10,000 worth of brakes, but here's the deal. Eight piston carbon ceramic brakes.
You're just showing off now with the 8-piston.
Like, do you need
like
the extra two? I don't know.
No. And you don't even need the carbon ceramic brakes either. But listen, all cool stuff to talk about.
Let's fire it up and open the hatch.
Yeah, let's do that.
So I'm going to give it some revs, and then we'll take a look at the engine, too, which is pretty nice, but all in the muscle.
Yeah.
What? How high is it letting you go?
I still went to about 7,000.
7,000.
Yeah, the rev limiter is kicking in at 7,000 as it sits.
All right, let's look at it. Damn, it's hot out here.
Just lift, yeah. So like I was saying before, this car has so much carbon fiber, just the sail panels, the engine. It's got $15,000 worth of carbon fiber on it. You don't have to get it.
They did
it
very nice job in this engine compartment. I mean, the fiber, the knobs are nice. The plenum's beautiful.
Get some marshmallows out here. Yeah. This thing is cooking.
It's hot anyway, and now it's really hot.
The little wing comes
all fiberglass, all carbon fiber airbox, really cool. The wing that
Let's
comes
see if there's
up.
A switch for that.
I don't, you think there's a manual? I guess there is a manual.
There is, so you can clean under it.
Oh! I'm sorry for sounding gay, but... Wow!
You totally
yes,
gay
you can
up.
Clean under it. That
yeah,
makes
so
sense, because if it only
it.
Came up at 65 miles an hour, how would you ever get your boy to detail it?
Yeah, actually, it comes up at 65, so on your way home on that back road, when the cop sees the wing up, he'd be like, yeah, you're not doing 30. We know what you were doing.
I love the star drive, or the... not the star drive, well, the spline drive or star drive, like all the stainless steel. Yeah. Car companies finally got it, which is car guys really like what a car looks like under the hood, and you putting a big piece of plastic, like a big plastic trash can lid under there that just said Cadillac in the middle of it, and it was made out of plastic,
it says,
but it was supposed to be aluminum.
Dealer only.
Yeah, yeah. That wasn't cutting it. We love the aluminum. We love the you know,
plans,
again, they took time and they made the right fittings, the right nut and bolt selection, the all the fluid caps and all that kind of stuff. I like the probably nice oil fill, and I'm guessing that's for the engine oil. I don't, God knows where the dipstick is, but the oil fills really,
you know what,
really
some of these cars, they don't need a dipstick anymore. They just go by the gauge.
Oh.
It'll just fire it up and say, hey, you're low on something, and then...
Interesting.
You know, you could top it off in an emergency, or then mostly it's for the dealer, but at least they show it off.
All right. I'm going to go drink a soda. You guys look around the car, and until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea, saying keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.